Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time, and I should say welcome. We've been on hiatus for a month, and today we're going to be talking about spiritual awakening. So please feel free to participate or to just listen. And to those that are joining us via podcast at a later point in time, please call back and join us live at another point in time. And there's one other piece of housekeeping that I wanted to do, and that is to let you know that, of course, on this show, Kat does not do readings, but she is going to be on my Friday night show, which is called Different Strokes for Different Folks. That's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S., and that is going to be January 31st for the U.S. and will be February 1st at 9:30. Kat, help me out.
I think it will be 9:30. It depends on time zone changes for you.
Yeah. What time is it?
Currently 11 a.m. here.
Okay, so there's a three-hour difference. So it would be at 10:30 a.m. on February 1st your time.
Yes, which is Australian Eastern Standard Time. I'm in Brisbane, Australia, for those who don't know.
Perfect. Well, I haven't asked you on air the big question.
Oh dear. aren't we already married up?
I know. Well,
I know. I still
that is to a level. I think we are pretty well wedded, and of course, your other significant other is also a David. No, the million-dollar question I wanted to ask you live is, how are you doing tonight? So our listeners will know.
I'm doing really well, thank you. It's a beautiful day here in Brisbane. We've had a cool change. There's been some storms and rain come over. It has not, as far as I know, I haven't checked the news, but as far as I know, it hasn't really solved the bushfire problem.
Oh.
But it has given us a reprieve from the heat. So, yeah, we are feeling here, at least here in Brisbane, we're feeling a little bit more comfortable today. But, yeah, the situation in Australia is quite bleak. And if you remember back to a show we did October or November, and I chose to broadcast by the sea. I was sitting at Rady Bay in Brisbane looking out, and I could not see the horizon.
I remember.
For the smoke haze.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in early December, my partner and my children, my youngest two children, and I went on holiday down to the Gold Coast, and we went to the hinterland, and we did some rainforest walking, and we looked at over a lookout over the valley down at the Tweed, which is on the border of Queensland and New South Wales. And we could see bushfires, and there was no way you could see the ocean. Normally on a clear day, you can see right up to beyond the horizon. You know, the ocean is amazing. Everything. Well, you could just make out the breakers on the beach.
Oh, my.
At the lookout, looking across the valley. So the situation is pretty hard. And I think the most of Australia, we're all trying to get on with it. You know, if it's not directly affecting us, we know somebody who's been affected. there's only 25 million people here, and the majority of us are on the eastern seaboard. Not all of us. I mean, there's fires everywhere. You can look at the map. But there's a lot of people on the eastern seaboard. If you don't know, if it's not directly affecting you, it's affecting somebody you know. I know it's affecting a friend of mine I went to school with, Samantha, and her family. They come from Jindabyne, which is in the Snowy Mountains. I don't know how they are. I do know that a friend of mine, her mother was directly affected, and her mother's two friends had their houses burnt down. And it's just a very difficult time. So everybody's sort of trying to be happy, trying to get on with their life, but at the same time, you're unhappy. You've got this feeling of just sadness.
Mm.
And we talk about it amongst ourselves. And, you know, there's no amount of consoling that can really help with that. We haven't had proper leadership with our governments. We're looking to the fire chiefs and the people who are on the front line for leadership, and we're so grateful to them. We're grateful to the greater human community. We've got nations from around the world who are sending firefighters, good people who are leaving their homes behind and putting their lives at risk for us. And we're grateful to everybody who's made donations, whether they've been in the form of money or food or clothing or shelter. And we know that there have been some nations out there who are doing it tough themselves, who are also helping us. And, you know, that touches our hearts. So, you know, I'm only one person, but on behalf of Australia, I thank everybody who's listening who has contributed or even cared, because, you know, normally we deal with fire and flood in summer, but not to this extent. And as a nation, we reach out and help many other nations who go through natural disasters. The 2005 tsunami, our little nation donated $1 billion to the effort, and that's a lot of money for us.
Mm.
And and we've continued to, we've got a budget for donating to other countries for disaster relief and other humanitarian things. And it's just very, it feeds your soul. It's very heartwarming to know that we're not forgotten and that people care. And obviously, we don't go out helping others just in case there's a time that we need help. We do it because we value mateship above most other values that we have. And we see people. We don't see nations. We see people. And we see everybody as humans and that they're worthy of our friendship and kindness. And so mateship is the greatest gift that we can give the world, and we very much appreciate it when it's returned.
Well, thank
you. There you are.
Thank you so much for, you know, a first-hand report, so to speak, and for waking us up to just the catastrophic nature of the fires, and waking up those who have not raise their awareness to the level where they might be able to help out in some way. So thank you, Kat. And, you know, my heart...
Well, you know, wildlife. Wildlife need help.
It's tragic. It really is.
We're not just seeing human tragedy here. We're seeing animal tragedy. And whether you like animals or not, we are all devastated at the amount of tragedy that's gone on with the animals. And that goes on for industries that use animal products and that work with animals. We're looking at a massive milk shortage because we've not just lost cattle, we've lost their feed. And we've been through a horrendous drought, which is what has fueled all of this, all the dry tinder everywhere. We've been through this terrible drought. And so there have been places where they have been growing feed to feed the cattle and horses and other animals that are struggling through the drought. And now that feed has been burnt out.
Oh, God.
So the ripple effect here on the animals is insane. And, you know, that obviously works with the humans because the humans rely on the animals. And whether you're a vegan or not, you still need animals. We all live here together. And we're seeing, you know, obviously our little friends, the koalas, absolutely suffer. And
aww.
Kangaroo Island had a pure population of koalas that we were putting down there. They were chlamydia-free, which is a disease different to the human chlamydia. But that was a chlamydia-free population that was being bred up to then be reintroduced to the mainland, and they're getting wiped out. You know, that was supposed to be a safe place, a safe haven for our koalas. Sorry to interrupt you.
That's all right. You're passionate. Finish it up. That's
yeah.
Great.
Well, I can't watch the news every day.
I'm
because
sure.
When I start watching the news, I sit in there and I start to weep. I can't expose myself to it because I don't want to fall into a depression. I have little children. My son turned 5 yesterday.
Happy birthday.
They're 5 and 6. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, so we've got to move forward. We've got to have happiness in our lives.
Sure.
And I think that if there's a lesson that we can teach the world when they go through, and obviously the world has taught us too, is that when we go through natural disaster, which is inevitable for every country at some point, we've got to stand together. We've got to love and care for each other, and that includes the animals. And we've got to work with nature, not against her. And that means resist the urge to continue the catastrophe. There's people out there who've been lighting the fires. Those fires have not just come because they were magicked into place.
That's what I
heard.
There's
a bunch of people who have been busted for actually lighting the fires. You know, there's lightning strikes, another natural phenomenon that have also caused fire. Apparently, you can get light refraction, also droplets of water that can cause fire. I don't know enough about that science. Then there's accidental lighting of fire through ignorance, such as throwing away glass bottles and then the glass refracts the sunlight and causes a fire, or cigarette butts thrown out of windows in cars, or people not stamping out campfires properly. And there's been a couple of occasions where accidental backburning has accidentally caused catastrophic fire, but at least they were trying to sort it before it got worse. And unfortunately, in those situations, it got out of control. So, you know, of all the elements that you could have come through, you know, I'd rather die of drowning than being burnt alive. And there are a massive amount of animals that have been burnt alive, and there's been several people who have also been consumed. And I can't tell you how sad I feel about that. But the flip side is the amount of amazing people who have put themselves in the front line, who've flown from all over the world, and our own people here on the ground from the beginning, because this has been going on since September, David.
It's incomprehensible, Kat. It just is beyond my comprehension. And my heart goes out to you. It really does. I think that, you know, we could indeed do a show about this at a later point in time. But is there any final thought that you wanted to share on it, or should we segue into the topic?
The final thought is that think good thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
If something is happening that is awful, you must remember to think good thoughts. You must give praise and credit where it is due, and you must remember to think good thoughts. You must find reason to smile, because how can you move forward and live on and do those that have suffered proud if you cannot think clearly, logically, and kindly? So don't dwell in anger. Don't dwell in suffering. Think good thoughts. Think of a way to find a solution. Think of ways to be productive. Ask how you can help. Don't bulldoze forward thinking this is how I can help without asking. Ask how you can help. But remember that no matter what, love feeds life. So through love, we can all bring our lives together and have a more positive planet. And things like this can bring us together.
Absolutely.
And it's proving that it is. And so please think good thoughts.
Amen.
Okay, let's move forward.
All right. I just wanted to give a shout out. We have three callers. We have Marilyn, Eleanor, and we have a caller from area code 267. And we'll check in with all of you later, because we would love to have you participate in the discussion. And, you know, as you were talking and wrapping up your thoughts, talking about good thoughts as an example, and just addressing the whole subject of the horrible situation in Australia, I was looking at some of my notes, and I don't want to dwell on this, but there are some notes on the 10 signs of a lot of them apply to what you just said. One of them is increased empathy and intuition, feeling drawn to nature, an aversion to negative people or behaviors, a desire for united community, feeling and believing that all life is sacred, your consciousness feels renewed, you're living in the moment, and you have increased inner peace. So how's that for a segue?
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I think that the one thing that I wanted to say about spiritual awakening, and I'll share my own experience later, because I've had three profound spiritual awakenings in my life, but a point that was made when I was looking a little bit into the topic was that it really is a journey. And there are practical things we can do to invite it into our life. But I think what I really wanted to just go over is something that I read about what to do after a spiritual awakening, because I thought that was really useful information. And what it says here, and this comes from lonerwolf.com, it says that after undergoing a spiritual awakening, it's important that you explore all the different spiritual paths available to you, to go with your heart and instincts and choose a path that calls to you. It is crucial to practice some form of inner work while you're walking your own path. This will help you ensure that you're evolving, staying grounded, which is very important because you can fly away, and healing inner wounds that may sabotage your progress. So I just wanted to share that little bit. There's a lot more, but I'd prefer to talk about people's experiences unless you feel compelled to share something else. And Kat, I'm sure there might be some things that you'd like to share connected to your understanding of spiritual awakening before we go into the experiential part of it.
Yeah, it's spiritual. When you become truly spiritual, it doesn't happen from a book. It doesn't happen from a video or someone standing up doing public speaking. It doesn't happen from a conversation and somebody telling you how to think. There's no dogma. There's no doctrine. There's no belief, because belief can be changed. It's a knowing. Mm. It's an absolute knowing. And that is why a lot of the times when you read people's accounts of spiritual awakening, they say they woke up to whatever religion they were involved in, and they realized that all the doctrine and all of the stuff that they were being taught was rubbish. And it's because their feeling of disconnection is there. You start to question what you're being taught. You start to say, hang on, that doesn't add up. These things don't add up. What you're saying doesn't seem to make sense. You take away what feels right, and that may be a tiny percentage of what you've been given. I know one person who was Roman Catholic all her life, and an Italian woman. I met her recently, and she said, I still believe in God, but I can't do all the Catholic rituals because they're completely empty to me, and I don't understand why. And she said, I feel like when I pray, I'm disconnected from my God instead of being connected. And I said to her, you're awakening, you need to learn meditation. Mm. The thing with spiritual awakening is you stop being exoteric, which means you stop looking outside of yourself for meaning, and you start having to look within. You start having to be esoteric. And, you know, that's been a very frightening word for a lot of people who've been put through the mill of religion for a long time. They've been told words like occult, esoteric, meditation, yoga, all of these words are evil. And that is a control tactic, because they're not evil. I don't ever remember Paramahansa Yogananda being in trouble for doing something evil. All he did was teach yoga and meditation, and he taught the spiritual aspects of yoga, not just the physical. And when you turn around and you start looking at these people who are looking within, who are learning for themselves and are following their knowing, the majority of them stop outbursts of anger. The majority of them stop feeling like they need to control others or their environment so much. And the majority of them seek peace, seek solace, and remove themselves from vexatious people and situations. So how is that evil? That in its very action is peaceful. And that is what happens when you're going through that spiritual awakening. You literally feel lonely, alone, disconnected from other people who are involved in exoteric practice. And that, by the way, isn't always necessarily religious either. It could be academic, logic-driven practice that is purely masculine orientated in its thinking. It does not entertain anything that is creative, intuitive. You know, I mean, I live with an atheist. I love him very much, but he thinks that my spiritual experiences are all hallucinations. And I'll sit there and tell him about my experiences that I have. I have particular experiences when I do readings, for example, physical experiences that happen to me. He thinks that there is some subconscious hallucinatory experience that I'm having. He does not believe that I'm having a spiritual experience and working with spirit. And I said to him, well, you know, find someone who hooked me up to instruments. Not an angry atheist who's going to pressure me. Just somebody who's in curiosity. And then let's see. Mm. Because I'm like many other people who have become awakened, I don't give a toss about making you feel like I'm more interested in walking with the flow of my inner being. So that spiritual awakening is really awakening to hearing your inner being, understanding that your inner being is a microcosm of the inner being is a soul and it's a divine mind, and it's the microcosm of the macrocosm of the divine mind, which is all of the universe. And it's actually an innately happy mind. It's a mind that wants to learn and grow, and it will use contrast and agitation through by the personality's physical experience to learn and grow. But when we become aware of our inner being and we start to listen to our inner being and we meditate or we contemplate, we have quiet moments and we center ourselves, we become more and more and more in flow with our life. And in the spiritual awakening process, that's why you begin to feel isolated, because suddenly you're hearing the loud voice of your inner being, whether that is a vibrational experience you're having. Often people will feel like they're out of control, like the whole illusion of the Maya, which is all the physical experience of the world that is never, ever concrete. You know, it always shifts and changes. What's it all for? Why is this here? What's the purpose? Why are people seeing? Does it even matter? You know, a lot of questions come up in the mind, because the inner being is calling for you to just listen and to follow the path that it needs you to have so you can fulfill your life's mission. Does any of that make sense?
As a matter of fact, all of it makes sense. I'm thinking back to something you said earlier, and I don't remember the context, but for me, what I've come to embrace as a belief system with regards to my spiritual nourishment and where it comes from is I heard it once said to take what you need and leave the rest behind. Today, I take what I want and I leave the rest behind. I grew up in a rather sterile religious practice that confused me, because I had this inner experience that did not resonate when I went to church. And I felt a real void and that something was missing. I knew there was something beautiful to be gained from the spiritual teachings that I was taught, but it was the manner in which it was taught that did not resonate for me. And, you know, a lot of what I read in the Bible was frightening to me. And I came to a point where you were talking about peace. I came to a point where if something invoked fear within me instead of peace, I rejected it. And if something made me feel peaceful and serene or filled with joy, I embraced it. And that's how I came to deal with the Bible. And I found that, you know, I've gone outside of my religious upbringing and have drawn from different religions and different philosophies that have enhanced my spirituality. And as I said, I had three profound spiritual experiences. And I'm not going to talk about all of them because I want everybody to have time to share, and we've only got a half hour left. And before I go further, whose turn is it to do the meditation? I've forgotten. We close with the meditation, folks. Are you game?
Yes, I'm game. I'm
You sure? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Why don't we do the meditation at the end of the show, meaning we'll do it in 30 minutes, and that way everybody will have time to share. How does that sound?
Perfect.
Okay. So, shall I start off, or do you want to start off?
In regards to what?
Sharing something about our own experience with spirit.
Oh, the spirit, or with our own spiritual awakening?
With our spiritual awakening is what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this lifetime, I think I was born with a certain amount of knowledge, spiritual knowledge, and I know that because my mother took us to the Uniting Church when I was a little kid, and I kept wanting to run away from Sunday school. I was 3 years old. It was Scotland, and you know, there's a lot of angry Protestant situations there. And I told the woman who was up the front talking about her religious view of the universe that her ideas were completely wrong. I'd not just had my own inner knowing, I also, to some degree, picked up on what my parents had told me, because my father was a scientist. He was an engineer, mechanical engineer turned high school teacher who taught science. And at three, I must have absorbed some of that as well. But I had my own complete knowing about the universe beyond what my father had taught me. And I just said, nah, that's not the case. You know, you can't say that a person you're saying is God made the world in 7 days. That makes no sense. And I completely questioned that. So I was shunned. and I always felt a bit disconnected from other kids because I always had this deeper knowing, and I was having spiritual experiences when I went home. There was a man who had passed away, who hadn't left his house, and my parents bought that house. So, and I wasn't the only child who was having those experiences. All the children were, even our friends who were refusing to sleep over because of the ghost in the house. So we were all pretty aware. And fast forward to when I was 18, I didn't know, because I hadn't been brought up with spirituality, I didn't know that there were spirit guides and there were good ones. I only knew about the scary ones that came and scared the bejesus out of me in the middle of the night. And I was having all sorts of stuff happen. And I had no idea that I was a medium. I didn't understand any of it. And so my first spiritual awakening really was realizing that there were positive beings who were benevolent and were there to help. But the fact was that I never understood why they stood back and they didn't come forward and assist me. And it wasn't until later I realized that they are involved with this law, which is you only come forward when asked.
Mm.
It's like what I said earlier, don't help just for the sake of helping. Ask first, how can I help? It's very important to wait till you're asked to help or offer your help and wait to be seen, see if it will be received. So they're operating on that law. So I have to say my first spiritual awakening was more about understanding that there were benevolent beings who were there if I needed them and that I could call on that positive power in the universe, the positive love of consciousness. Coming forward again when I was a bit older, well, I'll just talk about my most recent experience with awakening. See, I think that it's not just a one profound, it's multiple experiences. It's like an onion. It's layer upon layer upon layer of coats that you take off. And then here's revealed a new coat you've got to get to know. And then you've got you've taken on the knowledge of that coat, and the old stuff that doesn't work for you is taken off, and then you've got a new awakening, a new awakening, a new awakening. And about, well, 2015 was a very horrendous year for me. There were positive things like the birth of my son, but there were a lot of horrible things that happened in my life. And in mid-2016, I didn't want to be on the planet anymore. And around that time, I had an awakening experience of my life's purpose, because I'd had my life saved 3 times in a month in 2013, and I knew I had to be here for a reason, but I hadn't really found that. There was too much stuff going on. So that awakening process into my purpose, even though I had understood so many other things about spirituality, to actually have the guts to turn around and say, yeah, I embrace this. No matter how many people tell me otherwise, I'm going to embrace this. That was a couple of years. And then when I turned around and said, yep, I'm embracing it, I was consuming books weekly. I began to just overload, just consuming books. And I then went through a period of learning about religious history and alternative history, knowing that a lot of history was written by people who had won wars and by people who had the dominant religion. So it was always skewed towards their ideas. So I started to look at alternative history as well. And I had then another big highly emotional awakening, where I became extremely angry towards the historical people of the past who had hurt other human beings for their own gain. And I think that I've come through that now. I'm not so angry at them all anymore. But it made me really question the whole way the world functions. And I became very pessimistic about the people at the top, the people who are running the show. I became aware of clandestine organizations veiled in religion that are not doing kind and benevolent things. And I started to really question everything. So that would be my last layer of the onion with my spiritual awakening. I don't know how advanced or behind I am in other people. I'm just where I'm at. And that's the thing that you have to say to yourself. Don't look at somebody else and go, oh, they're so much further along than me. No. You know what? They were where you are at. We all started school in grade one. We all did our time at school. And this is what we're doing here. This is the Earth School. We're all doing time. And those of us who have been educated a little bit further along the line are then turning around and being the teachers for the ones who are coming up. We're not any better than yet. We're just a bit older and gone through a few more things, and our bodies are a bit more worn and torn. That's all that is. How about you, David?
Well, first of all, I wanted to ask, how flexible are you with time?
Fairly flexible.
Okay, because I want everybody to have a chance to share. And I'll share briefly, but I love what you were just saying about not comparing yourself with others, because spiritual awakening, spiritual journey, it's all very individual. And for me, I had mentioned I'd had 3 profound spiritual awakenings. Each of them occurred after cataclysms in my life. And I'm going to talk and then just talk about a few things that happened after that. The first one occurred when I was 25, and it was after having come out of a deep suicidal depression. As I mentioned, I had become disillusioned with religion, but I embraced my spirit. I just didn't know what to do with it. I considered myself a religious agnostic, never an atheist in my book, for me, although I too was involved with an atheist for many years. God love him. He claims he's an atheist. I think he's one of the most spiritual people I've ever met. At any rate, what happened to me?
I know one of them.
Yeah, okay. There was a physical event that propelled me into a spiritual experience that was the beginning of an awakening. And what happened was I was driving to my elderly grandfather's house to help him paint his house. And I approached this curve in a road where there was a big truck at a stop sign on the curve, you know, and I could see a line of cars behind it. And I approached the intersection. It was a fairly speedy road. I was going 40, 45 miles an hour. And as I was approaching the on the curve in the road where this other road intersected with the road I was on, a car pulled out around the truck and into my lane of traffic. And I saw this elderly couple in it. The woman raised her hands up over her head in a gesture of surrender as if she knew. And there was no time for me to react, to put the brakes on or anything like that. It just seemed as if my car passed right through their car. And then I was propelled into this state of spiritual communion with a power that I had not conceived of before. I don't remember the exact conversation because it was all telepathic, but I do remember coming out of the experience suddenly believing in reincarnation, and I had no idea where that had come from because I'd never had any experience with the concept other than having heard that there were people who believed in it. I was shown some of my previous lifetimes, one that was very significant. Not that any lifetime is not significant, but it was historically significant. And I felt such a sense of awe and humility. It almost brings me to the point of tears to think of what happened. It transformed me. I mean, I've always been a kind and compassionate and loving person, but I came out of that experience alive and awake, and some of the most unusual things started to happen. I would think of a person, and not 5 seconds later, the phone would ring, and it would be that person, or I would think of a person. One day, I thought of 3 people that I hadn't thought of in years, and in the course of that day, I encountered each and every one of them that I hadn't seen in years. I mean, these are some of the things that can happen when you have a spiritual awakening, and a lot of times it can happen after a cataclysm of some sort in your life, or chaos can ensue after that, and that has happened to me on 2 of the occasions when I've wakened up. I'll just say that the next big awakening I had followed my surrender to recognizing that I could not drink alcoholically. And boy, did I wake up when I surrendered and the compulsion to drink was lifted from me. And that felt like a miracle. And then the other time was after I'd received a life-threatening diagnosis and there had been 8 major life-shaking events that occurred within the course of 6 months. And so that's part of my story, and I'm anxious to hear what other people have to say. So I'm going to go to the phone lines, and Marilyn was the first caller, so let me bring Marilyn live. There you are, Marilyn. How are you?
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm doing. Hi. Thank you. I've been enjoying listening. I guess, you know, it's so hard to kind of pinpoint one thing perhaps in my journey, but except a very strong desire to know the truth of who I am. and always having a sense that I was more than just an idea of a physical body. I was raised in the Catholic religion, and I enjoyed the sort of ceremonial aspects of the religion, and I enjoyed the messages of peace and love, and that felt comfortable to me. But I never felt like there was evil, you know, that wasn't a real thing, that was sort of made up. And I did actually go through a period of intense rebellion and, you know, as a teenager, taking a lot of drugs and things like that. But I think that I just have this inner sense that, you know, there was peace, there was love, there was, you know, kind of something beyond the limited experience, you know, that I perhaps was living. And that's what has driven me my whole life, really. Last year, I found myself in a hospital bed, though, I was very, very ill and had a near-death experience. And while I was in that state, I clearly remember being in a place of an other world experience where a voice that I believe was Saint Germain came to me, and at one point I had a choice. I could stay or I could go. And I decided to stay. And the reason was that I felt I have a new grandson. And for some reason, his life and the meaning of his life just compelled me to want to be here. And since that time, I've felt that everything is okay. Everything's okay, you know, in my life. Like, even if it may not appear to be okay, it's right where it should be. And that's given me a foundation to be able to kind of accept and move through some challenges, and to also keep on this path of expanding. And more and more I find awareness of the truth of who I am is coming to me as I ask. And I meet other people such as yourselves who are also on this experience, on this journey. So, yeah, that's about all I have to say about that.
That's a lot. So glad you're still here, Marilyn, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
I just wanted to let you and the other callers and listeners know that next week we're going to be talking about self-realization and what we've learned about ourselves over the holiday period and what do we still need to work on. So that's going to be next week's subject. And I'm going to, unless there's anything else you'd like to say, Marilyn, I'm going to move on to the next caller.
No, thank you for letting me share. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate it too. Okay, Eleanor is next, and Eleanor, you're live. What would you like to share?
Yes, it's nice to be with everyone this evening. I have a support group that I meet with on Sunday evenings, so that's why I haven't been calling in, and I missed everybody, and I look forward for this hiatus. The most experienced strength and hope I got over the years from very bizarre circumstances, I still remember what two figures that I thought came from another place in time and another place where people and beings existed other than the ones on the planet. I could see them when I was a little girl, and the last one I saw when I was 5 years old, and they were standing at the front door of the apartment house we rented from my godparents downstairs. I don't know what they wanted. They don't want to hurt me now, and this is the first time I've ever told anybody about them. And I I don't think about them as entities that would interfere with my living on earth. It's just that when I think of dreams, I don't remember them, generally speaking. And this was a dream that I remember. Lately, I had some spiritual experiences that I didn't follow through on. And it taught me that I wasn't God. I'm a very humble person, but they were correct, and I didn't act on them. And it turned out to be a tragedy. One was my godson used to get off work and eat his sandwich and drink his beer in front of the place he worked. And I had a dream that he was shot, and I was told to call him and tell him to stop doing that because it was too dangerous. And then he was killed in a drive-by shooting in that same place. And I have a friend who had a daughter who lost her legs because she was trapped in her apartment too long and laid on her legs too long. The circulation was cut off too long to save her legs. And I had a dream to tell her mother to get a key and also go into the apartment with one of the little machines I had around my neck. I didn't do that, and she lost her legs. I don't know why I didn't go through with the messages, and I don't know how much not going through with messages you receive has to do with you. If it happened to have been a coincidence that I didn't go through. I really want to be forgiven for not following through. And when I think of the beyond the being standing at my front door when I was 5, when I think about Jesus, I think about being at the Salvation Army camp when I was 9 years old. I'm 68 now. And there was a lovely chapel on the camp's grounds. And they had this blue-eyed white person kneeling at a rock. And on the chapel, stained glass. And I remember kneeling and remembering my pastor told me that there's no representation of Jesus, that nobody knew what he looked like. And if he was from that part of the country, the world that he was from, he certainly wasn't white. And even though I had that information, I wanted to be saved so badly, I looked over the fact that the picture was there, and I kneeled and I asked for God to take my life and let it be. And that was when I was 9. When I was 30, I was diagnosed with mental illness, and I had to decide whether I wanted to live or die, and I decided I wanted to live. Maybe I would have decided if I wanted to die if I could see the future, because I suffered a lot longer than I needed to. And it wasn't because I didn't have good treatment. I had the best treatment. But it just wasn't meant to be for me to have a nervous breakdown in a week and go back to work. Some people do that. They have a nervous breakdown. It doesn't last any more than a week or two. They get medication and they go back to work. But that wasn't the case for me. I would have cyclic bouts with depression and mania. And I for the past 8 years, I've been symptom-free. So I'm in remission.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And, Eleanor, I feel so honored that you felt safe enough to share the experience that you had when you were five. And, it's just beautiful that you feel that kind of safety here. And I so appreciate your sharing. I don't know if, Kat, if you want to make any comments before we move into meditation. Our area code 267 has left us. They stayed with us for most of the show, but it's just the three of us at present.
I think a lot of people have had some sort of experience of prophecy and questioned it and not passed it on and seen the consequences play out. You're not alone in that. The fact is that we're brought up in a society that tells us that having these abilities is wrong, and that acknowledging them and working with them is wrong. And if you were brought up in a Christian society, you said you went to a summer camp that was Christian orientated and all of that, you would have been brought up with all of this doctrine that divination is wrong. And so here you have these prophetic dreams. So what you've been taught is all flooding back into your head, whether you were conscious of that or not. And that would have held you back from speaking up. Now, the other thing is that who you had to speak up to will have had a choice as to whether or not they would have listened. And you don't know if they would have listened. So please forgive yourself for not saying, because you had all these circumstances around you that were telling you not to say. And, if you had been brought up by atheist academics, you would have not said anything as well. So it's not just because you were brought up around Christian people that you didn't say anything. It doesn't matter what part of society, unless you were brought up by gypsies or people who were spiritualists or spiritists or something like that, or you were in some sort of indigenous culture where they had shamanic practices. You were not in a position to say. And maybe that had the consequences of not saying had a fall-on effect with your mental health as you grew older. But now, looking back on it all, that the answer is to forgive yourself, to just release it. And that might take a while or it might take an instant. But that has been, to me, it sounds like you've been going through a slow and steady ongoing spiritual awakening process throughout this lifetime. And that will serve you well, because next lifetime you will come through with all the wisdom that you had from this lifetime, everything that you've gained. And you get another chance. You get another chance every morning when you wake up, because you reset through your sleep. and then you wake up and it's a new day. So please, Eleanor, forgive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that your godson, who he may still be in non-physical or he may have reincarnated, I don't know, but he loves you. And your friend who'd lost their legs, well, that might have just been part of their path anyway. And they had to learn the lessons that went along with that. And the people who were directly involved with her had to learn the lessons that went along with that. And your voice may or may not have been heard. So we can't live in hindsight and beat ourselves up over things that in retrospect could have happened. We can only acknowledge the knowledge that we had at the time, which was, you know, in a world where you were told any form of divination is wrong, and speaking about your dreams, you know, that's not the way we act. So, you know, you can only do what you can do. So love yourself and love them, but love yourself more because you've acknowledged it and you can be at peace now. And
thank you, Kat.
You know, you'll come to a place where, yeah, well, you're a beautiful person, Eleanor, and anyone who listens to you can see that. So you've got so much wisdom, and you've made up for it 100, 2 million fold by the good deeds that you've done since and acting on the urges and knowings that you've had to do good. So don't think on it. Please don't think on it anymore. What do you think, David?
Well, I echo your sentiments. I believe that forgiveness begins within, and the most important person to forgive is ourselves, and that we don't even need to ask for forgiveness. It's already given. I know you practice. Is it okay for me to share the religion that you practice, Eleanor?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
I know that you practice a Christian tradition, and, you know, your sins are already forgiven. You don't have to ask for forgiveness. They're already forgiven. And the notion I have about sin is it's really just an error, and errors are correctable. You know, it's missing the mark is the original definition of sin. So, you know, I think the word sin takes on this meaning of shame. And there's nothing to be ashamed about. We're human. We're subject to error. And we can correct it. We can learn from it. It's simply a learning opportunity. So you've had a learning opportunity. And quite frankly, what you think you did, it doesn't jive for me with anything to feel badly about. You have the gift of sight, and you just didn't know what to do with it at the time. So, you know, don't beat yourself up, like Kat said. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Kat. Thank you, David.
You're welcome, Dawn. Well, Kat, would you like to take us out with a meditation?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, so sit comfortably or lay down, depending on where you're at. And close your eyes and take 3 long, deep breaths. Breathing in, 2, 4, out, 2, 3. 4, in, 2, 3, 4, out, 2, 3, 4, in, 2, 3, 4, out, 2, 3, 4. And just breathe comfortably. Focus on your spinal cord, and it's a rod of white light. And as you're focusing on your spinal cord, I want you to, in particular, focus where your heart is, but from the spinal cord into the heart. So from the inside of you, from the inside of you to your heart, in your physical. And I want you to see a pulse from your heart, just that boom, boom, the pulse. But let's see it as a light. And the light is on a little river, a little stream. And it pulses up from your heart up into your third eye with every beat, boom, 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 boom. Use this pulse. And then just feel it and let that gentle beat take you away to floating in a warm bath with the beat and the pulse and the warmth and the water and the safety and the security of the locked bathroom and the warm bath. Now that flow has light, and that flow has love. That beat is the sound of the vibration of your inner being in physical manifestation. Your beat might be a little quirky, or it might be straightforward. It's your unique pulse, beat, light. Let this light fill your third eye and let it fill your ears and let it fill your sense of wonder and let it fill your sense. And let it fill your sense of curiosity. And let it be a guiding light just for this moment, just for the now. Boom, 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 boom. The light. The beat, the pulse of your inner being, filling you with love and guidance. You can feel it. You know it's real. You can hear it. You know it's real. You can get an instrument and hear it. With a stethoscope, you can find the nerve that it passes through the vagus nerve. It's real. You know it's real. You know it's real. Now be in the dwelling of your knowing. Be in the dwelling of your knowing. You know your inner being is real. You feel the flow of the energy of your inner being because your inner being is you. And then let's step out of the bath and let yourself drip dry and open the door and come back into your awareness in your physical body. Come back into your room and know at any time you want to connect with your inner being, all you have to do is go within and to follow the pulse and the beat of the light within you. And everything about your day will change. Everything will become easier. You can reset at any time using that technique. And if you are going through a spiritual awakening right now, use a technique to help you navigate. And if you come out of one and you know you're going to end up diving into another, keep the technique with you. Remember to be in the flow of your own inner being. And when you're ready, open your eyes.
Thank you, Kat.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kat.
Well, please join us again next week, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Monday morning, Brisbane time. And for now, I wish everybody a good night or good day, and God bless.
God bless. Nice to be with you, Kat.
Lovely to have you again, Eleanor. And thanks to everyone for putting up with the sound of my children.
It's a joy. It's a joy.
They're on school holidays. They were told to be quiet. But they're great.
They're great.
They're wonderful.
They contained themselves for a long, long time, too.
Yes.
Well, it's been a wonderful show, and I thank everybody that participated. Thanks to you too, Marilyn. She's left us now, but I loved her sharing, and I'll look forward to being with you again next week, all of you. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.